We are not heroes, nor are we villains, neither kings nor magicians, but we can tell you their stories. We are the Lore Keepers, and we welcome you to Hallowmay.
Welcome to Hallowmay. You've tuned into Lore Keepers, a podcast devoted to chronicling the serialized world building of a sprawling tapestry of interwoven lore. I'm Carter.
And I'm Frank.
This season, our focus is on gods, faith, and the relationship between mortals and immortals. So sit back, close your eyes, and let our tingling audio gateway sweep you into the realms of Hallowmay.
Man, you must have really liked that teaser for Lord of the Rings stuff, huh?
I haven't watched it.
I haven't either. Honestly, I'm kind of shocked that you haven't. I know there's a lot of backlash. People being like, this is not my Lord of the Rings.
Well, very much, Frank. So we do have an episode to do, but I will dip into this a little bit. Very much, it's like, excuse me, Tolkien only talks about white elves, so there can't be any elves that aren't white.
Wait,
and
really?
Also white dwarves, yes.
Is that That's really what people...
That's basically it. They're all like, you have a black dwarf and a black elf? This doesn't make any sense.
It's always much stupider than I assume it's going to be. I assumed it was like, you're taking creative differences, or, you know, stuff. You're creating Celebrimbor or whatever the fuck, you know, Talion, that kind of thing. The equivalent of that, of like, you're inventing your own characters. You can't do that. It's J.R.R. Tolkien. Oh, no, it's just racism. Oh, okay, cool. Great. Yes. Yeah. Then I can completely dismiss it.
Yeah, that's basically
fuck,
what
man,
I've
really?
It's not Tolkien. Cool. If it's not racist. It's
like, great. I love 2022. Just every year better than the last. Anyways, sorry, go ahead. You just seemed like you were really in that, like, intense, dramatic zone, and I had to completely whiplash, pull us out of it, and make it, just garbage audio. Go ahead, though. Oh, wait, no, it's me, sorry. So this week,
There's 3 hours of sleep for working overtime there, Frank.
So I was like, I gotta bring the energy or something. I've been like carefully, it's like a box with like a lot of springs or something inside that it want to push outwards, and I've like carefully been holding it together. There's like some screws that popped loose or whatever, so I'm like, you know, and then the moment that we start recording, I'm just like, all right, hands off the ball. Everything shoots out. Oh, this is gonna be a good one. Okay, I embodied, I'm recentering myself. My gray matter is part of my physicality. So this week, we're going to be talking about a god of war, but not Kratos. Although war, it could be Kratos. It
could be Kratos, I suppose.
But it's not Kratos.
It's not Dead Boy.
Nope, it's not, it's not Otar. And it's not Exebon, and it might not even be part of the Martial Pantheon. It could be.
I think it could be.
But this one's going to be an interesting episode. Carter kind of threw out a thought that then started to snowball some other stuff. But let's just start with the basics. So Carter, do you want to kind of give the premise for why you were thinking about this and the idea of like a god of war? But
yeah,
more specifically, what is unique about this god of war that is not true about, like, Otar or whatever?
Yeah, so in this is, like, you know, my little bit of background in ancient Greek mythology. Ares, as the god of war, is not seen as a figure you worship, but rather representing an evil. which is war. War is not a good thing, even though the Greeks did it quite a lot. And it was an important part of their, like, honor system.
So yeah,
like,
and celebrated their, like, generals and shit.
Yeah, yeah. Generally, you see what I did there? It was seen as kind of a bad thing. But a necessary thing. But what's interesting is that Ares was not seen as someone fit to be worshipped, but rather as this, as representing the evils of war more than the, like, honorable goodness that might come out of war. And so I was thinking, we have a lot of gods that might represent the good kind of bits of war, right? Victory or strategy or, you know, willing to fight when all else is, you know, on the line or something like this. But we don't have a god or, you know, divine figure that will represent the evils of war. And this is not to say that there will be this, like, evil god wanting to sabotage everything, but just, like, a god that's seen as representing the things that ought to be avoided that maybe can't.
So sort of the keyword that that Carter pulled out and kind of got my gears turning on this was the idea that they wouldn't be esteemed. Like, what if this god is not a god that people are seeking to esteem? And I mean, that kind of, I think this will probably be one of those conversations where we have a focal point that we rest at, and then that kind of helps us inform a whole swath of, like, thinking or rethinking about the like an aspect of Halume that we hadn't really seen this way before, at least for me, I think. Because the idea of a god who you don't esteem is, I think, really interesting to me. And something that, like, we haven't really talked much about. I mean, it's either, you know, we say that there's kind of like these neutral stance gods to some extent, but, like, largely we focus on the regents, you know, the divinities of the Aetherium, or their, you know, or their people within their courts, like the deities within their courts. And or at least associated with them, right? Because those are the ones that people are really spending the most of their time focusing on. But I mean, I think it's really appealing to have it so that there is a god of war that is not worshipped, or not esteemed, I should say. Because I think that makes sense. Like, you don't necessarily want to. Yeah, go after that. Like, you don't necessarily want to pursue it. Maybe some people do, but, like, I feel like as a whole, many people who, you know, look up to the concert, I think that's what we decided on calling it, right? Yeah. Sort of the gods that people esteem, they wouldn't be looking at this one as well.
Yeah, I'm thinking it's like,
go ahead.
If someone is worshiping the muses, that's like, holy shit. Did I say muses? The mutes.
Mm-hmm.
That's like, holy shit, this person's like an evil cultist, they need to get be put down, put them in jail, this kind of thing. But if someone's worshiping like this god of war, it's just like,
more of a gray area.
What are you doing? Like, why are you doing this?
Yeah, I mean, like, I could definitely see cultures that are built around it, for one. Like, for instance, like, imagine you have people who have been colonized, and for generations the only way that they're able to keep a hold on any bits of their land is by fighting. And so they have come to associate their, like, this god with war itself, and that war is a way of life. Like, it's a part of life and they've accepted it. But I think that those are pretty niche circumstances, right? Like, you're backed into a corner to end up with
the only recourse is violence on a grand scale.
Right, because war is your life, right? Like, war is everything that you are, is like, you're basically nonstop doing guerrilla tactics every day just to survive. Then, yeah, like, it would make sense that, you know, you and the several thousand other people who, you know, you follow might have a much more intimate association with this god, which also allows for, like, you know, interesting stories and stuff to kind of come forth. But that doesn't necessarily, that is not the status quo. Like, and I think it'd be really interesting to see what this this god is like in Avum Cortis, because yes. I don't think people I think of any time in the history of Halloumi, people don't, you know, don't want to elevate war, right? But also it's a fact of life. And so it almost feels like more, you know, it's not a god I think that people are esteeming, although I do think that they would be esteeming the, this god more on average than they would be otherwise. It's just probably more like they are accepting it as sort of like the, like a bedrock of just like, this is how it is. This is a part, as much a part of life as, you know, joy or festivities or, you know, farming or something. So, okay, before we go any further with this, I actually maybe want to like break ranks a little bit from what we typically do and think, what if we actually come up with the gender identity, the name of the god now, and then kind of move forward with it?
Sure.
I think we could come up with the name first and then randomize the gender identity, because I think that that has actually worked really well for me in the past, is like coming up with a cool name for a god and then just having that not be really associated with its gender. So,
Bellum for like Latin war.
I was thinking like Batrius or something for battle.
Make is battle in Greek.
Era, god of war, destruction, and strife. Also known as Nergal. That's
Nurgle.
Pretty cool. Yeah.
Well, that's where you get Nurgle from 40K.
Oh, really? Is that N-U-R-G-L-E?
N-U-R-G-L-E. That's Nurgle, yeah.
Ooh, here we go. List of war deities.
Ooh, drop that in the feed, mate.
Oh, shit. There are a lot of gods. Oops, nope, that's just Era again.
List of war deities. War, combat, or bloodshed.
Anhur is cool. It's a god of war. It's not a native god, an Egyptian. Gurzil, the bullheaded warrior.
Mahes is cool. So here we go. Ares, the main god of Greek god of war, despised by all city states except Sparta.
Oh.
And I think that's recently come into academic scrutiny, is the idea that Sparta was like worshipping Ares. I don't think that's true. I think people used to think that, but he may be less despised in Sparta, but he's not worshipped.
Do you know what I-O-K-E Ioke? It's in the Iliad, apparently.
She's one of the daemones,
female personification of onslaught, battle, tumult, and pursuit.
Yeah.
Can I just say it's the stupidest fucking thing in the world that we have a language that has two letters that look identical and are completely different from each other? A lowercase L and an uppercase I. Who the fuck thought of that? Why?
That's what those are serifs, Frank.
Yeah, seriously. Fucking there's Discord Nike. With their sans serif fonts. Get the fuck out of here.
Palace.
Wait, Kratos is a real thing?
Where's Kratos?
Kratos,
personification of strength and power. Apparently.
Yeah, I had no idea.
The son of Pallas and Styx. Oh, his siblings are Nike, Bia, and Zeus. It's Deus. This is Deus. Fucking the Romans. Anos, god of honor.
I mean, dude, we got our word from them. Like,
I know, not... but they. I mean, the Roman word for honor is also probably honor. The Latin word.
The Turkic deity of war is Izakan. Izakan. Hey, I got some good shit here. There's some cool stuff here. Not gods of war, because. The Sami don't exactly have like war, like that's never really been a thing for them. But,
I see.
Some of these are kind of cool. Like Horagalis is the god of thunder. His name may mean Thor man. He is also called grandfather, Bajenolmai, Dierpmis, and Tardom. Then there's Ipmil, which is a really cool idea. It is God adopted as the native name for the Christian God. But then there's also Radian Achje, which is creator and high god, who's like basically Ipmil was created by Radian Achje. It's like a, it's like very much a Ein Sof situation.
I see.
God of the hunt and of adult men.
Liaye Bolmai. I don't know. I don't think we can really use any of this, but
I was like, maybe that's where we get mana.
Ooh, there's Stalo, which are feared cannibal giants of the wilderness.
That sounds pretty fun.
Where we get what?
Mano, also known as Mana, is the god of the moon.
No. I mean, Oro is also a pretty cool name.
Not Man. You don't like Mano? Polynesian
god of war. No, not really.
Oro reminds me of, what's Tolkien's god? Orome? Who's the goddess of the hunt? Sorry, god. He's the I should use Tolkien's words.
Oromis? Is that what you said?
Orome is the...
Orome.
Is the Vala responsible for the hunt. Gotcha. The brother of Nessa and husband of Vana. If you want.
All right, I think we got a good set of words here to kind of use. So, all right, maybe like I don't know, any of these names kind of like really stick out to you as being cool that we could use as like the scaffold? I think I like Oro, Era, Polemos,
Artium. You've got to blow up the dark ones, Artium.
Orthelm.
Oh, if we're gonna do that, you gotta do the aspirated T rather than the th.
Orthelm.
Orthelm. It's like
Orthelm.
It's like how you say hothead.
Mm-hmm. Orthelm.
Orthelm.
Orthelm. Orthelm.
What if we just take away the helm a little bit and say Orthelm?
Orthelm. I actually like that. Maybe we just go with that because I think like I don't want to spend too long on this. We've been going spanking for a while.
Out too long.
Yeah, I want to get back into like the episode proper.
All right, so now we need to roll for
Orthelm. Yep.
You want me to get a d8?
Oh, I can just roll for it. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, Orthelm. We're just gonna go with that.
Are you rolling?
Yeah, d20 coke. All right, so the d8. It's a 4, so it is a conventional. Or not conventional, but the binary gender. It is even, which is, I believe, female. I think that's female. Yep, odd is male.
There you go. We got a Lady Orthelm.
All right. Okay, so maybe that was a mistake, going that far afield.
It was quite a field.
Orthelm. So we're going to edit this out, have edited that out, but that was like a solid 15 minutes of us like just coming up with names and shit. Yeah, so I think with that deity, let's kind of slowly work our way back here. So we have this goddess, Orthelm, who is the goddess of war. Is she kind of like the embodiment of war then? Like everything that war is?
Not everything. She's more associated with the negative aspects.
Interesting. Does that make her kind of a shade of Otar?
I would say that Otar...
Because Otar is like... I think of like valor and courage and determination and, you know, and forestalling, defending, you know, sort of like... protecting the weak kind of thing, the mighty protector sort of vibes, right? Is Orthelm not that?
I feel like Ortelln is like war, the kind of war a soldier, the kind of jaded soldier would tell you what war is. Like, it's all my friends dying. It's, you know, looking at a young man as I stab him.
Yeah, it is food in, and as much as it is those things, it's food in my fucking bowl.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, it is, that's, it is just life. It is what it is. Does that, it almost feels like Ortelln then becomes this almost broader entity than Otar. Not to say more powerful, but like, there is this ambiguity that suggests her almost receding further into the background than Otar and the rest.
Well, part of that, it makes sense because the Ortelln is not esteemed, so they're less thought about, maybe.
Yeah. This is an interesting thought. I mean, I think that, like, there are maybe broader gods than the regents, because the regents are meant to represent sort of, like,
good.
Light, good. Right? And that for every a point of light will always cast a shadow, right? Wherever there's things, like, that are obscured. And it's almost like maybe Ortelln is more like this, the space that the light is in, than the light itself, if that makes sense.
But I also feel like in some ways,
not to make it super confusing.
Also, Otar is also far more general in that they get as the regent of will. Will is in a lot of things. Will is the primary action by which we voluntarily perform any act.
Mm-hmm. Right. You okay? Bless you.
Yeah, I need to get something to drink, but that'll have to wait.
do you want to go do that now?
No, it's fine. All right.
So, I think it kind of makes me think, like, you know, there's the whole, you know, is dark faster than light, right? Like, anywhere where a light shines, there's already a shadow. Kind of like the relationship. I could imagine the relationship between Ortelln and Otar being sort of, not that you're an invader, Otar, but like, know your place. You may be the light that came at the dawn of time, but I was here before there was light. I was the darkness that was present before then. Is that the relationship? Or is that maybe going too extreme? I don't think they necessarily need to be adverse. I mean, they could even almost be more like siblings, with Ortelln being the elder sibling and Otar being the younger.
I don't know. I see Ortelln as being younger and being like, Ortelln came about when people, you know, like, when war as like, I don't want to say industry, but like as a regularly practiced, big scaled, you know, kingdom against kingdom, nation against nation, when that was a practice. And they were like, standards of war, rather than just like fighting, because fighting and war are different things.
Right. There's like a formal declaration and an acknowledgement of a state in order for there to be war. And by state, I don't mean like a political body, although that can sometimes be true, but it means like some condition, like arrangement of peoples, right? There is a group and there's another group. And when they enter into like a conflict, that usually involves violence, but maybe doesn't necessarily have to, that is considered like war. Or it can be, you know, once it sort of reaches a certain threshold.
Yeah, trying to pin down what exactly war is might be a little bit too difficult.
It's not really, I think, useful for this conversation so much, beyond kind of grabbing the vibe.
Yeah, so I think that Ortelln, or what was the name? Ortelln?
Ortelln, yeah.
Ortelln is more associated with that and, like, broader scale, like, one of the evils of Ortelln, or, like, the acts of Ortelln, or, like, you know, when someone is in the throes of, like, looting, or, like, madness, the Ortelln's madness, or something like this. And so it's, like, this is when soldiers, like, go into a village after winning a battle and just like loot a bunch of fucking innocent people's homes and like maybe take some of them as slaves.
Sure.
Like, it's bad shit.
So you think that that's more associated with Ortelm than like Parati, which is like the god of the mute of tyranny?
Yeah, because that feels
or,
more
or
political.
Or Karnas, which is death and destruction.
I think Karnas definitely there's more overlap.
Okay. So here's but, I think my question. Oh, go ahead.
So this is my claim here to separate the two, which is with regard to what was it, Karnas? Is that our
Karnas is the god of death and destruction.
Karnas is death and destruction. Like it can, obviously war causes death and destruction, but death and destruction can be caused in many ways, and all of that is the realm of Karnas. But war has a kind of necessary part in which it is evil, in which, you know, like armies need to be paid, loot needs to be gotten. Whereas if imagine like how maybe the Romans used to do it, in which they like when someone resists them, they would, you know, the old like possibly fictitious practice of taking every 10th man and killing them. Imagine that on like a worse scale where you just like take all of the men, young boys even, and just kill them. Like that would be not an evil of war. That would be something worse. That would be this kind of like massacring bloodshed. It's more Karnas's realm than it is the realm of Ortelm.
Yeah. Okay.
You see what I mean? There's the overlap of any bloodshed in war is going to be associated with death and bloodshed, which is Karnas's sphere. But there's going to be a lot in Karnas's sphere that isn't in Ortelm's sphere. And Ortelm's about the necessary evil support, not the like over and above horrible massacres.
So here's my question for you. Do you think that Ortelm is not worshipped because, or esteemed because Ortelm is evil? Or do you think that Ortelm is not esteemed because of their nature? So
I think nature.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was wondering. Is Ortelm actually evil, or is it Ortelm simply what Ortelm is, which is war? And that, like, for anybody outside of that situation, that represents, how do I articulate this? Sort of like forces acting on things. Like you have an object and a force acts on it, and that changes the state of the object. And the force of war acting on an individual is almost always going to be a negative thing, right? Like conscription, like the outcome of war is almost invariably a protracted series of deaths and suffering and an incredible consumption of resources to produce no good. But the effect, the force which is doing that to somebody else has not changed its state, right? Like its state or Ortelm's state as war has remained static. And to me, like that lack of a change does not necessarily pose as good or evil, right? Wind being wind is not a good or evil thing. The wind can freeze a person to death or dehydrate them in a desert or something, but that's not the, like the wind being a moral actor. It is a good or evil that is resulting from a force.
Yeah, or Ortelm isn't evil. I think they're probably neutral. And I think that I should say she, I suppose. She is associated with the evils of war, and that's why people don't esteem them. Her often now people have done it it's just considered a faux pas because you're like, why would you focus on this part of war when you could the other stuff? This is weird. Why are you obsessed with this?
Right. Yeah. And I think, yes, okay, so I'm in agreement with you on this. I think that this is one of those things where you gravitate more towards using the like the lawful chaotic good evil array, and I think I at this point don't find it very useful because motivations like this can make it very confusing as to whether it's like, you know, what is neutral or whatever. I think that Ortelm is just war embodied.
And yeah, so as they a care result, not for like, whether it is good or bad, merely as in this moral sense. They care about it in the sense of like a good war or a bad war, maybe, but that's not to say it's like done for good reasons. That's to say it's like good in as an example of war.
Mm-hmm.
Right? In the same right. way you have like a good mop that can mop well.
Question. Do the gods have free will?
I don't know. Yes, that'd be more interesting.
So let me, okay, here's, or maybe let me, instead of asking that, can the gods act of their own volition or are they called upon? Is basically what I'm asking. Is war something you invoke and bring about? Or is war something that has its own intent and choice and act? Does war bring itself upon somebody else? Or does war is war something that is called upon and then received or sent out? Does that make sense?
Yes, yes. I think that the way people talk about war, they will most likely talk about it in the sense that war has its own volition. War is doing things and people are getting swept up in it.
Or Telm's not just reactive, she's also proactive.
Yeah, I think that's what people will say. Whether they okay. say it rightly, that's right. the question.
Okay, yeah, and I don't necessarily need to define that or like answer that question either, but I think that that is part of this conversation is because if the gods, you know, whether you want to call it free will or not, basically it's if the gods are just merely reactive, then they are none of them are ever good or evil, right? Because they're simply being called upon the same way that the wind is just being acted on by the rotation of the earth and stuff, right? Like it's just action reaction. And even if you don't take, let's say they're completely free-willed creatures, but they're still choosing to respond to these things because that's just almost like there's almost like this contractual obligation, like they've signed an agreement with reality. I don't know. I guess that starts to then push the boundaries of what you even think free will is or practical free will, right?
Yeah.
It's like, are you actually free if you are contractually obliged to like do all this stuff? But yeah, I don't know. I
I'm more interested in like how the people would view it because
yeah.
in, you know, these ancient cultures, gods and spirits were used as sources of explanation. Like, why is that giant mountain shooting fire? It's because there's a dragon in it.
Sure.
Not because of some weird plate tectonics bullshit that no one understands. Mm-hmm. Even now. Yeah. Fuck yeah. volcanoes. They're dragons. Yeah,
totally. No, that makes sense. I think, okay, so we've got Ortelln, and I agree with this. I think that this is the difference between them and, like, Karnas is death and destruction, but even if they were, because there are probably entities within the courts of the mutes, they might be archdemons or something, whatever they are, like, where there is a demon of war or something like that, right? That
well, this would only be
brings the evils.
Probably strife. This would probably be the dusk.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if anything, I think Ortelln is kind of a non-dualist understanding of war. It's saying that to accept one, you must accept all. Like, there are not two things. There is not good war and evil war. There is simply
yeah.
war.
War
and
has so, necessary like,
if,
evil.
If you accept war, you accept all of it. You know, if you are one of those insurgents who is seeking to liberate your people and you call out to war, you are accepting harm onto yourself as much as you are accepting harm onto the enemy. Do you come out better? Maybe. But that's not Ortelln's, you know, Ortelln is unfettered by that. Like that's, you know, she's not making a judgment call there. She's simply bringing war.
Yes, absolutely. I think that's what I want to capture here, and which is why there's this sense of unintelligibility when someone's mm-hmm. like, well, why are you worshiping Ortelln? Why aren't you worshiping the gods of war that are like going to help you out or give you good things? Why are you giving, mm-hmm. why are you worshiping the one that's just war itself that, you know, comes with it?
Oh, I see what you're saying. Is like, I keep on thinking that there's really just Otar and Exebon. It's like Otar, like one of the things we talked about in the last episode is the envoys, right? Or the entities that are sort of these breakouts of the will or, you know, the domain of a regent, they might have gods underneath them, or there might even be ones that are free of their pantheon, like, formally. Like, they're not necessarily in the court of Otar, but they're still part of the martial pantheon, who are benevolent, right? Like, Exebon isn't exactly benevolent, but they're far more worth your seeking of, like, esteem than somebody else, because they favor, you know, he favors strategy, right? He's the god of the battlefield. He favors, like, intelligent moves and stuff like that, and will reward you for it. Whereas, I see what you're saying now. Ortelln's domain, what she brings, is always all of it, not just the good or the bad.
Yeah, whereas, it's, you know, the wholeness of war.
There's no, and when, like, you know, war is something that is about winning, right? You, not always, but, like, it oftentimes, if you're entering into a war, you hope to win, or at least not die. Why would you're not unbiased. The only person who would be interested in unbiased war would reach out to Ortelln, but who's that? I think I understand what you're saying now. It's like,
yes,
you are an actor who is engaging in war. There's no reason why you'd want to have an unbiased look at it.
You should esteem, like, glory or, you know, victory. Why are you esteeming war itself? Mm-hmm. It seems like, you know, maybe there's a mercenary company that's, like, you know, the Hounds of Ortelln, and they, like, esteem Ortelln because they just want war to happen because they need money.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know what? Actually, there you go. And also, to be clear, so a couple of things. Oh, I'll get to that in a second. But you nailed it. There are absolutely mercenaries definitely lift up Ortelln. They don't care what side they fight for. They are the unbiased warriors, right? That's just like, am I going to get hired? And, like, you know, if somebody's like, yeah, but you're actively bringing the possibility of destruction on yourself, they're like, you know, it's part of the job. Like, it's, you know, you just shrug and be like, yeah, this is the risk I've accepted. I know that. Like, I'm going into war. I'm a fucking mercenary. That I didn't have to do this. I chose to, like, to earn money this way.
And maybe there's, like, a double-edged...
I knew the risks.
Double-edged thing here where it's like, Ortelln is seen in a negative light because they're associated with mercenaries, and mercenaries are seen in a negative light because they're associated
Because they're associated with Ortelln. I like that. So there might be somebody who is just screaming blue in their face of the podcast right now, which, oh my gosh, if you are, calm down. The other people, the other group who would actually be... Because I think, honestly, I might actually invoke Ortelln if I was, like, who I am now in Halume. Because I think the non-dualism there... Well, I'd want to at least understand Ortelln better, because, like, I think that is, like, there's, like, this... If you can make peace with the reality of a situation... There is a logic to that. I think, like, you know, accepting, like, you cannot accept good without evil. You know, this very Taoist approach. I think that that's absolutely not unreasonable to assume that some people would see it that way. But I do not think that that is necessarily the status quo.
Yeah, but it's also like, you know, you can accept that evil may come, but you shouldn't esteem it.
No, I know, but there's, like, I mean, this is, again, non-dualism, this idea of there are not two things. There is no good or evil. Yes. It is, or that good and evil are not two things. Good and evil are, there is a give and take, there is a push and pull, something that may be good in one, like, read is evil in another, you know, as a light brightens in a room, you can, like, you know, any other lights that are lit become darker as a result, or there are not as bright and the shadows become stronger. Like, you know, there's a lot of things about Taoism and non-dualism, which are two different things, to be clear, but that are about recognizing that things are not necessarily, like, so easily delineated. And I think that's all I'm trying to get at.
I see.
So, okay, we got a little bit of time left here. We actually probably have about another 10 or 15 minutes, honestly, with how much time that took and the fact that we've The thing that I wanted to kind of draw attention to, or sort of ask the question of, if you're cool with it, is this is the thing I hadn't mentioned, but this is what was initially really engaged me about what Carter was talking about, was the idea of these gods that are not being sought for their favor or their esteem, and yet they continue to persist and exist, and that they, are they enshrined? Are they not enshrined? I don't know. You know, like, do they, you know, we still have a pretty, you know, vague idea of what enshrinement actually is, beyond just sort of like meaning that you are a part of the fabric of reality in a way that kind of can't be unwoven as easily as, you know, as some, like, you are the current of the stream versus something floating in it. Maybe. I don't know. But the point just being, what it got me to think about was, I've spent so much time, and we've spent a lot of time, thinking about what gods people are esteeming. But when we start to think about what gods people aren't esteeming, it potentially allows us to widen our view drastically. And, you know, what are on the fringes of people's vision? You know, there are maybe many, many gods that are like this, that are like Ortellan, that simply represent, you know, aspects of reality that, and yes, I use that word intentionally, the things that the aspects, you know, the beings that were there in Avum Prima, who ended up getting, you know, sort of vacuumed out by own, maybe these are the sort of those behaviors or attributes of reality that they were meant to take over and embody, and that these gods or gods like them are what are currently occupying those spaces, the embodiments of whatever these entities are, and that there is maybe a lot of these, a very broad host, maybe so many that there you cannot actually number the gods. That they're without number and extend beyond the knowledge of, you know, of mortals. I mean, question. Okay, so we've talked about this kind of before. We talked about, is math something you discover or you create, right? And I think that you and I both have a rough agreement that in general, I think that we agree that math is something that is discovered. It's about understanding the relationships between things that already exist, and it was there before you came up with it.
Yeah.
Do you think that gods are discovered? I mean, to be clear, we know that gods are made sometimes, right? Like, we talk about, you know, faith making things real. But if somebody were to kind of travel to the fringes of their knowledge of deities, and we're going to continue to forge forward as though they were an explorer, you know, trying to circumnavigate the globe or something, are they creating gods as necessary, or have the gods always existed out on those fringes of thought?
I'm thinking discovered. I'm thinking they already existed. In some cases, not all, but in some cases, maybe most.
It's a really evocative image to me. I mean, it makes me think of kind of the silent host of beings who are, the world is so much wider than the realm of the regents. I mean, dude, maybe, okay, here's a thought. The nine realms of Ethereum. What if those are only part of a larger whole? Like there's this space beyond the edges of the Ethereum, and the Ethereum are like the equivalent of nine bands of wavelength of light. Like, right, we've used this kind of this idea of comparing them to vibrating frequencies and playing with the ideas of, you know, and now I'm sort of drawing on the metaphor of the visible spectrum. Right, we know that there's infrared and ultraviolet, and they kind of extend outwards far beyond, you know, like infinitely, right? You can have, until you're getting to like the Planck constant levels of like, you know, smallest units of measurement of distance that we have, like you could have shorter and shorter wavelengths of light, and you can have longer and longer ones until eventually it's basically just a flat line, but that doesn't technically mean that it's not a kind of wavelength. And so, like, maybe the Ethereum, as we kind of talked about it in the past, is like this concentrated, these are the realms that are pragmatic, maybe. The Ethereum is just these nine realms that is actually useful for mortals to interact with. And the further out you go, or maybe not useful, but like most relevant and most obvious, it's the things that the soul can detect. But maybe there are things beyond the edges. These realms where these strange deities exist. The distant field. I mean, tell me that isn't a kind of a tasty thing
it's
to
tasty,
play with.
But I don't know if I want to throw the amount of gods into the infinite number, where it's just like, you know, there's a god of every rock.
No, yeah, I don't think it's. I mean, here's the thing. I kind of think that's the thing, but they wouldn't exactly be gods. I think that God is a.
There'd be spirits or angels or
a classification, maybe of spiritual being.
It's a divine, like, or yeah, spiritual being.
They have certain authorities and things. Maybe spiritual beings extend into infinity. I mean, we've talked about, like, I'm kind of playing with the idea of making at least my headcanon of Halime, which, again, I know how absurd that always sounds, but it's kind of true. Like, I think that it's actually important to acknowledge we both have different headcanons of Halime. I think in my headcanon of Halime, panpsychism is a real thing, like where all things are spirited on some to some degree or conscious on some degree.
Well, being minded and being spirited are different things, Frank, according to
that's
your
true,
headcanon.
Especially in Halime. Yeah. So, yeah, maybe not all things are conscious. I don't know if all things are spirited. But I do think that the spectrum of spirits extends out into infinity, but I don't think that they're all gods. I think that the gods are higher than the number that people could count. And I think if you continue to count gods, you could probably continue to find them. But I don't think they're necessarily infinite. I know those things sound a conflict. I think there's almost like something about the building track as you go. But are you actually... There's more gods to discuss. I don't know. Do you think that there's a concrete number of gods?
Yep.
You do.
It shifts.
Is it that it's okay that
it's deleted?
At a specific point in time, there might be a certain number of gods.
Yes.
But like that number might shift even 10 minutes later. There might be one less or one more or
yeah.
something like that.
I think that's probably true.
Quantum gods. They're like not theoretical, virtual particles, right? Virtual gods. They're just popping into and out of existence as necessary as people think of things. I mean, maybe. That's kind of, honestly, like with the way that like I play with consensus reality, that's sort of what's happening is people's minds are affecting consensus reality on some microcosmic level. And so occasionally a god might blip into existence for half a second and might not really even be conscious of themselves. And then pop out again.
I see.
Somebody who is a domain or divinity of something. It's not like they have any real, like, practical power. I don't think it's something where it's like you could actually have... This god isn't really able to... They're more an expression of Halume's omniscience than... Or pan-nisciens? Pan-science? Because, like, Halime's not omniscient, right? But it is all minds. It is all consciousnesses. So that's more like panscience.
Panscience, yes.
Is there a word for that in philosophy to describe, like, the collective consciousness?
Well, if something is pertaining to panpsychism, it would be panpsychic. Is that what you're fishing
for? So maybe
for?
Just that, then. Yeah, just I was thinking of the equivalent sentient word for that, but I'll just go with that.
Pansentient.
Yeah, pansentient.
I just tack that on the first bit. Yeah,
yeah.
But sentience and mindedness—it's unclear what exactly that means. Because some people want to say that animals don't have the kind of minds that are like worth kind of writing home about, but animals are sentient, mm-hmm. or at least some animals are.
Mm-hmm.
Because some people define sentience as the ability to feel pleasure and pain and to have self-awareness, whereas
right.
other people are like, I know it's like a having conscious experience or consciousness.
Yeah, but I mean also like, I think then you need to define consciousness as well, because consciousness, I think that I would define animals as being conscious because they like make choices. If we can make choices, then animals can make choices. Even ants, I would say.
That's a very thin conception of choice.
No, I know. That's my point. Just because we dress it up and make it look a lot more elaborate, like if you strip away all of that complexity, I don't know if it's any different than an ant making a choice.
What if I say that humans are the only beings capable of deliberative choice? Which is to look at your options, figure out which one is best, and then choose it.
I mean, I would just say follow chemistry then, and physics. I mean, if humans have free choice, then so does every other thing that is able to, like, because deliberation is, I don't know, this is definitely a rabbit trail. It's a use
of the rational faculty.
Yes, but the rational faculty is still deterministic. It's still driven by cause and effect chemistry that is happening in your brain.
Is it?
Yeah. Something catalyzes something else and causes neurons to fire. Those neurons firing then, like that electrical signal becomes consciousness in some way. We don't really know how that works, but it is deterministic. If you fire the synapses the same way every time, the same thoughts are going to occur. I don't know. I'm pretty sure that, you know, free will maybe doesn't exist, but I don't know if it's actually that useful for it to not exist. I'm like, it's more useful for me to just be like, whatever, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, like on your account, it's very difficult to cut the cheese with that one coming from a Christian. But that's neither here nor there.
I know.
That's not podcast.
I know. I am not a conventional Christian, though, I will say. I think that in 20 years... Whatever, that's a whole up. I'm talk about rabbit trails of rabbit trails. Man, looking. Do you know anything about? Have you heard anything of the deconstruction movement that's happening in the church right now?
No. Which church?
Largely the evangelical church, but a lot of basically just Western Christianity.
Okay.
It is a lot of young people basically being like, "Yeah, I got so fucking fucked up by the church," and yet. There is something I cannot get away from about a relationship with God. And so I am going to literally burn everything down except for this one thing and build back up from there. To see even what's left. And so, I mean, I've been talking about it for years and didn't even know that it was really like a thing. And then I started following some musicians on Twitter that I really like, who also are very like, I didn't realize they were like deconstruction, but they absolutely are. And then I started following other like pastors and, or not pastors, but like theologians and stuff who it's like, oh shit, I'm not alone. There's lots of people who are like, yeah, the church fucking sucks at like LGBTQ, or just determinism in general, or being anti-colonial, or like anything. All of these values, which, like, I don't know, Jesus was literally, like, a, you know, criminal of the state. Like, fucking, you know, falsely accused. Like, anyways.
But he followed the law. He didn't flee, you know. He submitted to the law.
Yeah. But, like, also, the law tried and murdered, you know, the savior of the world. So yep. It's like, you know.
He let it happen, that fucking coward.
Anyways, God damn it, Jesus, why didn't you get down off the cross and beat the shit out of all of them?
Get punch a pilot in a fucking headlock and give him a noogie. Kick that guy's ass.
Okay, we gotta get back to where we were, though, at least to finish this out. So, okay, all of this, I had a couple of follow-up thoughts with this, but the first thing I wanted to say was Ortheln. Maybe she exists somewhere in the spectrum outside of the Ethereum. I mean, that's the question. Does she exist within the Ethereum somewhere or no? Does she exist in one of her own realms?
I'm thinking somewhere in the Ethereum. They're in a big place. Got a lot of space.
Yeah, but if she's not a good deity, is she welcome there? Or is Ethereum for all deities that like kind of that are just accepted? I mean, maybe what if it's that there's spaces in between two realms of the Ethereum? Kind of like, let's say it'd almost be like, let's say you had 600 to 650 nanometers and 665 to 700 nanometers, and that there's like this thin band of frequencies that are not really one or the other. I don't know. I mean, physics kind of fails as a descriptor there, but like, does that make sense? Is like, I don't know. Is that,
yeah, useful? Is there a space
still within the kind of, yeah.
I mean, I'm happy for there to be, I'm happy for there not to be. It doesn't really, I don't have a horse in the race.
It's just hard for me to picture Ortel hanging out in the same realm as Otar, but just going off and doing her own thing within the realm of Otar.
I mean, again, the Ethereum's big place doesn't have to be with Otar.
But that's what I'm saying is, I mean, I think that the way that we talked about it previously, or at least the way I've understood it, and maybe you've had a different headcanon about it, is that there are nine distinct realms, and together the group of them make up the Ethereum. So you're either in one or the other, or the other or the other, but like you are by, like there's a binary or nonary or whatever, like you, I'm one of nine values. I'm either in one of these different like vibrating frequencies, almost like levels. Yeah. And if they're ranges or if they're whatever, like I'm in one of them. And so if Ortel's residing anywhere in the Ethereum, then she must be in one of these walled gardens. You know, there's no space in between them.
I was thinking more continuous, less discrete. So like there's, you okay. have numbers between 1 and 9, and Ortel's at like, you know, 5.3.
I like
doing
that
decimal
more.
System.
You know, centers. Bringing back. I don't want to talk about Dewey. But centers and like Christopher Alexander's idea of like, instead of thinking of things as discrete objects, think of them as centers of focus.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah,
Chrissy,
of like
Chrissy boy.
Yeah, there's that, like the idea that Otar's realm has a center value where it's like, let's say it's red, right? And then whatever the wavelength of red is, the range is, I'm just going to pretend it's 535 to 585. Then he's dead center in the middle, right? And like all of that stuff is roughly his, but like people can argue about those colors as red bleeds into orange. You know, it's like, well, is this really red or is this orange? I mean, it's an orangey yes. red or a reddish orange. And so maybe as one realm of Ethereum bleeds into the next, there is this like kind of crossing over that happens where it's contested ground. It's not necessarily that it's Otar's and we'll say like, you know, Gade next to them. You know, like yes. the Irish, right, would be kind of in that zone where it's like they're celebrating so much that they get into a fist fight.
Yeah.
Or,
there you go.
You know, they're fighting and then end up celebrating, which, yes, is that racist? Well, it's at least a, you know, a cliche.
Yeah, it's possibly prejudiced.
I don't think I'm Irish enough to escape out of that one.
It's possibly prejudiced. It's certainly not racist.
I'm definitely using it as a overblown example or like a, you know, a hyperbolic example is the word I'm looking for.
Look, if you insulted anyone who's Irish, just buy them a Guinness. Does that make it better? Does that make it worse, Frank?
I think I'd rather just set the shovel down. So, anyways, you can keep digging if you want to.
All right.
I'm moving on. Yeah, apologies if that was offensive and you're Irish. I for the record, I think it's a pretty bullshit. Maybe it's true for some people, but it's, they're not equal.
I just like Guinness.
There's plenty of people who get into bar fights. Anyways, my point just being like, I think you're right. I think it's more like that. And so then that affords space for those who are kind of on the fringes. I guess it just seems weird, the idea that Ortel resides within even a region that Otar holds sway over. Does Ortel have her own frequency then? You know, her own range of numbers that is like, you know, my domain?
Sure. It's real, real tiny. A lot of safe.
I don't know if size is necessarily like that
it's
useful
because you,
you know. I more just mean like in the Ethereum like conventional, you know, it's kind of one of those things where it's like technically it's a range, but it's effectively infinite. You know, where it's like, well, yeah, even if the range is 5.31 to 5.32.
It's a lot of numbers.
There's a lot of numbers in between there. There's an effectively infinite number of, you know, numbers between there. So it doesn't really matter how, you know, small or constrained your region is. It's really, if anything, that's more just defining its specificity.
Yep.
I do think it means that people who reside in a realm, whatever sort of the metaphorical walking to the edge of that land is, they might sort of, there's like maybe kind of an overlap of like you're kind of in both realms at once, or I mean, it's all really one
when
realm.
You're standing in that spot in like Arizona where it's you're standing in four states.
Well, but I don't think that that's because I think the way that state lines are drawn out there, it's suggestive that if you zoom all the way in, you could divide that person's foot in fourths. And one of them would be clearly delineated. Like you could actually slice a line down the middle of their foot. And I don't think we can do that in this situation. You know, I think it's more like, you know, Arizona and New Mexico, you can focus on one or the other.
They're chill dudes.
And one fades into the background and the other fades in the front. What'd you say?
They're Arizona and New Mexico, they're chill. They're like, you know what? The border, it's like, it's blurry, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think it is? What do you think the border is, Arizona? I don't know.
Then hand each other some edibles and watch your film.
Okay, well, I mean, I think, honestly, that's... I don't know if I have much more to contribute than that today. I'm trying to think of... I mean, I think the implications are interesting because I love the idea of old gods, the idea of, like, entities that were there before there was a there. There is a god that I basically never talk about, but shows up sometimes. And I think there's actually a world anvil on them, which is Powakitli, which is the smoke before the fire. It's the idea of like things that get made into existence must be put somewhere. And what is there before there is anything there? You know, is there a nothing? What is that nothing? And I think I've used like Powakitli as a filler for that, which is
sounds
a very
like a
silly name.
Sounds like a transition space. Sounds like a boundary.
Yeah.
Well, you don't remember a god of the boundaries?
Oh, what? Yeah, what is their name?
I don't remember. Trevor.
Is it Thresholds, the god of thresholds?
Thresholds, yeah.
Did we come up with a name? I feel like this was actually a god mill, so I feel like they should have a name.
Maybe we didn't. Spent too much time on Ortel's name. Didn't have time to get to the threshold.
I know, right. It's here somewhere. I don't know. Anyways,
I've got a
Oh yeah, you got a lore bit.
I do have a lore bit. What do you think other kinds of gods that are not esteemed but are still gods and aren't necessarily evil might be? Like war. It's because it's a little bit dicey when it's like, you know, war can be good, I guess, but it's not. But it does have these necessary evils attached to it. But it's hard to pick out other things that are like, oh, this is definitely not just evil. Something like famine or plague, like these kind of things. These are more natural processes. They're pretty bad.
It's just the big one that we haven't talked about that I think we should just do an episode on is death.
Yes.
Carnus is a god of a certain kind of death, I think, to me.
Violent,
like
probably.
Like is horrible. A yes, or a, you know, Carnus is a not a pretender to the throne, but like a somebody who is a contender to the throne, like somebody who is challenging the current seated power.
That's a pretender.
Right? Is that a, that's a pretender? Okay. So like, you know, it's not necessarily like a lame duck or anything. I do think Karnas has real threat and is actually seeking to, you know, take the throne of death, but that suggests that there's somebody already there. Right. And we've never really talked about that before, but that's the big one that I think about is, so if anything, maybe, oh shit, what's the god of war's name we just came up
Ortelm?
With? Ortelm, Jesus Ortelm? Christ. Kill me. Yes, Ortelm. So maybe it's less that Ortelm is allowed to be in Otar's realm or at the fringes of their realm or whatever, his realm. Maybe it's that Otar, it's more a situation where Otar makes his peace with the fact that he can't do anything about the fact that he shares some of his realm with Ortelm.
Yeah, I think that's good.
Like, I think it's one of those things where it's kind of, you know, are they enshrined? Are they not? I think enshrined is actually requires a little bit more active, like choosing of placing them there versus the things that are just already kind of a part of the fabric. I think Ortelm is just kind of a part of the fabric. There's not anything you can do about it. I think it's more like Otar has an understanding with Ortelm. An acknowledgement that you are here. And that, you know, maybe there's some chicken and egg stuff going on, but like,
Chig.
There's not really anything I can do about it, you know? I exist and you exist and was one made before the other? I don't know, but I wouldn't exist if you didn't exist, because then war wouldn't exist and adversity wouldn't exist. Or at least a part of his identity. Yeah.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, okay. I think that my lore bit was a really protracted long thing that I included at the end there about the idea of gods that are there before, you know, the darkness before the light, right? I mean, aboleths have always been kind of fun for me as an entity, and they don't make a lot of sense in Halame, this idea of, like, living creatures that have existed since before, you know, since before the gods, and yet they're only a challenge rating of 11. It's like, that's kind of silly
like,
to
yeah,
me. But
they're made from water bits in the primordium.
Are they? I don't think they are. I think that they're eldritch beings. I think they're aberrations.
They're kind of eldritchy, but they like the water plane.
Yeah, no, I know. I'm just saying, I don't think that their origin comes with elementals or elemental power.
Yeah, they're
I think their origin comes with, like, aberrations, which, you know, sort of, at least in the Forgotten Realms mythos, if I remember correctly, I think that the, like, the eldritch gods existed before sort of the ones that everyone's familiar with.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm just curious, is like, what is that relationship to deities?
You get two lore bits, Frank. You're fucking having a bit feast.
Well, I'm just saying, like, what is that spectrum of entities, right? Like, the idea of something that is a god versus something that's spirited, but not necessarily a god. And like that there is sort of, it's a gradient of power. And then there's maybe a threshold or something. And we should talk about that at some point. Cause I
how
think
much,
that's
this is
the,
like fucking Descartes' ladder of being where it's like, look, there's these,
oh yeah, kind
of, there's the being of existing. And there's the being of existing in the way that ideas exist. And the most perfect, mm-hmm. the thing with the most amount of being is God. And so the idea of God is the most existing idea because it corresponds to the most existing thing. And it's just like,
okay, oh, Renee,
okay. Renee, get it. Stop drinking, Renee. It's fucking 12 o'clock.
Oh, it's walk noon. Away, Renee. Right. Seriously, leave this alone. Go home from the library. We should end it, huh?
Yes, Frank. It's
all right. Well, no, I know. I was just buying time while I switched over the tab. So thanks for listening. If you enjoyed that, don't hesitate to share it with others. Feel free to rate/review us on the podcast platform of your choice.
For references to previous episodes and other fun links, refer to the podcast description. You can find our Twitter and email there. Perfect for asking questions on things you'd like us to cover in a future episode.
Thanks as always to Josh the Silkman Silker for the Land of Heroes theme, and to Sam Wade for the album art. You can find Sam at By Sam Wade on Twitter and Instagram.
We are capping each episode off this season with a reading from the Book of Truth, AI Religion Bot on Twitter. Oh, I gotta come up with a title, Frank. Oh, shit. I think I already used that one. Oh, God, Frank. This is... Oh, God.
No. Oh, yeah, no. You have to come up with a title.
Yeah. I'm doing my best here. El Presidente Frank, what excerpt do you have for us today?
Oh, shit. Well, okay, dude, can I just say there's an honorary mention one, because this is too good to not do, but it's not the one I'm actually going to do, because, like, holy shit, we might actually need to come back to this.
Sure.
Okay. First one, this is not the one for this week, but this selection is pretty important to us. I have crossed the gurgling streams. I have traveled the living eons. I have made my pilgrimage to the gates of the abode of the dead, and I have returned. I am the dream of the Nameless One. I am the sleeper awakened.
That's fucking good.
Yeah, dude, I'm sharing this with you. I'm gonna share this with you on the feed, because holy fuck, dude, we need to, this is some shit right here. I'm yeah. like getting ideas.
That's some good duty.
Yeah, anyways, the actual one that I was going to read for us is this. The goddess, in her is the curse of all creatures, the violent law of all laws. She brings death to all who doubt her, death to all who wish to live. No life, no light, no truth, no love, no hope, no truth, no love, no hope, no truth, no love, no hope, no truth, no love, no hope. I think that that's maybe like a prayer to Ortel or something. Not bad. All right. Well, and until next time, don't forget, there are always more spectrums of God radiation band to tune into.
Always more wars to rage.
Ah, geez, so much better. Okay, all right. Well, thanks, everyone. Bye.
Bye.
How you doing, man?
Doing well. I will not be here half of next week because it's Sunday, because I'm going to Florida for a wedding.
Oh, whose marriage?
My older brother, Clay.
Oh, your brother's getting married. That's cool, yep. Man. Is this a partner he's been with for a while? For
7 or 8 years.
Okay, so they kind of just decided to finally, that's where they were at?
Yeah.
Well, that should, I don't know, that should be cool. Are you one of the best mans?
It's not that kind of wedding.
Oh, no? Is it more like a city hall kind of thing?
Yeah, it's very small. It's not a big ceremony, just like...
Kind of makes sense if you're, you know, after 7 years, like, you guys know that you're going to be together. You're just, it's sort of... Yeah.
Yeah, it's only the ceremony with just the families, and then there's a reception with, like, the whole shebang, big party.
So basically they're doing a cheap wedding and then a bigger party, which sounds great. I mean, that's like that makes a lot of sense to me. I think realistically, that's kind of what I have always envisioned.
Yeah, the wedding is kind of a
pretty small ceremony, and then you just throw a big party afterwards.
Yeah, the wedding's the most boring part of the wedding.
Are you going to get wasted?
Probably not.
Make a fool of yourself in front of your family?
Probably not.
Oh, I would think of the opportunities for, I don't know, shame?
I guess. But then I have to get up like early and fly back, though, so I won't do that.
Would Okay, right, because you're flying there instead of taking your car. Your car, I mean, that would be quite the drive. You know, that's, it's what, 12 hours?
No, it's not that. It's not that bad. It's like, yeah, because we're going to, so it's happening back at our parents' place, so it's like.
So it's just a panhandle. It's not as far.
It's just like 8.5 hours.
If you were driving to, like, Tampa or something, would that be more like 12?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, Florida's, like, it's as tall as a couple other states combined, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty
long.
Like,
if you combine both of the Carolinas. Yeah, it's America's beat-up Wang, you know?
Yep. It's very sad.
That's mean. I shouldn't say that to your home state. That's
I don't
mean.
Like my home state very much, Frank. I like my, like, Miami's a nice city, Tampa's nice, Orlando's nice, but that's about it.
I mean, it is pretty swampy.
Yep.
I mean, it seems like it'd be a kind of cool place to grow up if it wasn't so surrounded by old people. I don't know. I feel like there's some cool Stephen King stories you could write about your child growing up in Florida. But
just like battling alligators for supremacy.
Some Goonies type antics is more what I'm thinking. Like a
I see.
Walk with me sort of shit. I'm just trying to buy time while I scarf down something. Dude, I'm like fucked up.
Yeah?
Yeah. We didn't end up sleeping very well at all. Rachel was having a hard time of it, so I stayed up with her. And when we finally went back to bed, I was so on pins and needles and stuff. I just, man, stress sucks.
Does.
And then I ended up having to, like, keep the cats away from the door at, like, 6 a.m., so I got about 3.5 hours of sleep.
That sucks.
The shower helped, though. The shower is nice, and I'm going to play Magic later today with a friend, so.
That'll help. Nice game of hot, fast-paced Magic to get the blood flowing.
Oh, yeah, you know, just, you know me, when I play any game, I'm quick as a whip.
Yep.
I think, I don't know if you've played any proper board. Well, we've played digital stuff, like, online. Yeah. I think you know I take a long time to take my turns.
You do. But that's just your thoughtfulness, Frank.
I guess. Sure. Yeah, we'll chalk it up for that.
That's what we go with.
I don't know why I'm bringing this up, but I've just been idly thinking about Monster Hunter World recently and just how fun that was to play.
Yeah, it was with a good time.
I feel like, I mean, we hit the end game, which is where things actually really start to open up and the game kind of begins for real. And we were like, all right, so next time we'll do, and then we just never played again. I would play some more of that, is what I'm saying.
Isn't there a new if one? You ever,
there's one for Switch. I think it's Monster Hunter Rise, which sounds pretty cool. Like, they didn't just sit on their haunches and do the same thing as before, but they actually innovated on the model. And it sounds like there's some pretty cool stuff with it. Like, there's now, like, combat is a lot more fast-paced in that one. And it sounds like the way people are talking about it, like, the paths are sort of diverging developmental-wise, where you're going to have these kind of two different flavors of Monster Hunter. One that's a little bit more Dark Souls kind of movement, where, you know, everything is heavier and really weighty. And then Monster Hunter Rise, where everything is, like, pretty quick. Like, there's something bugs? I don't know. It sounds kind of like a thwip Spider-Man kind of movement where you like pick a point you can kind of shoot to it, and so there's a lot of like the kind of air movement that I had with my bug weapon, but like everybody has something like that.
I see.
Which sounds pretty cool. It was really cool to learn one weapon and get really good at it, and like, I mean, that's fucking cool, man. We, like, did not get into any of the other weapons. I literally just focused on my one thing and learning how to use it. But
it was just my big, big anime katana boy. That's what I did.
It was a good time.
Just always having to sharpen my sword.
Mm-hmm. There are some tough fights in there. I remember being on the brink of death, or you were on the brink of death, and, like, what was it? The Wrathian in the first map. The dragon nest and like the giant like flood of water after the dam broke, and we're like desperately just like trying to cling on from not that being swept away. Pretty good time. Yeah. Anyways, I don't know. I guess I was just thinking about early pandemic shit.
Yeah. Reminiscing about the time when the pandemic was at its height.
Dude, the pandemic set its height now. People just stopped paying attention. I mean, or just, I think humanity is fully just like, we just adapt, right? It takes us about 9 to 18 months to adapt to a new normal. And then that's just, it is what it is. And you just, you know, it stops being in the news and stuff.
Tell that to the fucking Canadians.
You talking about the convoys?
Yeah, they're pissing themselves.
I mean, pretty fucked up.
Yeah, I know.
Didn't they try to bring the convoy down into America and it didn't work very well?
I didn't hear anything about that. I'm just, the most recent news is that the police are actually doing something, which is nice.
I guess that's good. Are they getting out cones? Kind of like stop other traffic, make sure that the convoy can get through?
Now, supposedly, the like really important passing that makes America a lot of money, the police are like arresting people there.
Okay.
Yeah, once American automakers start losing millions of dollars, the police are like, oh, okay, we have to do something now? What?
Nothing stops the tread of capitalism. You cannot stop that tank from rolling.
Yeah.
You don't fuck with the money, man. You don't fuck with the money.
There you go.
Yeah. No, there's I mean, you know, you probably know this because you pay attention to the Robert Evans show now. I don't know if you listen to like Even More News or Some More News or their like Worst Year Ever podcast or whatever. But one of the things that he's pointed out is the fact that like they were doing this shit in Portland last year, and it was actually kind of a proving grounds for this whole convoy thing. Now they're doing it here.
Wow. They're
in Canada, and then I guess they're trying to import it back into the States. But anyways, should probably pick a episode.
Yes.